Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey, this is Jen Johans at FilmIntuition.com and FilmIntuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen. This week, I am joined once again by my very good friend. Mitchell Beaupre is the managing editor for Letterboxd, whose writing on film has also appeared at Paste Magazine, The AV Club, The Film Stage, Little White Lies, and The Playlist. And recently, Mitchell just completed an interview for Letterboxd with Anna Kendrick about her directorial debut, Woman of the Hour, and her cinematic influences that you should be sure to check out. I always love when they come on the show because it's talking to an old friend about movies we love and actors we love. And Mitchell and I have very similar tastes. So it's always a pleasure. Mitchell, how are you doing?
Doing very good. Very, very excited to be talking Gould. Super thrilled to come on. I got the shirt all ready for it.
Okay.
Just goulding it up.
It's amazing. And you're wearing... You know, and this is an audio podcast, so I love when I do that. People are like, what the hell? Wearing an Elliot Gould, the Many Faces of Gould t-shirt, and a Lost in America hat for Albert Brooks.
Yeah, of course, always.
Combining interests. They have their amazing poster selection in the background, After Hours, and I always love Mitchell's poster. So everybody needs to Zoom with Mitchell.
Yeah, we'll send out the call. I'll just put my details out there on social media and we could just set up. I'll just do routine Zooms with everybody.
Yeah, and everyone can ask you questions about Letterboxd. I mean, I'm going to be your agent, basically. Want to Zoom with them? Hit me up. And I'll weed out the weirdos. We're just offering a new service.
We'll figure out a fee. Yeah. It'll be fine. We'll make some money here. You'll get a cut, you know, just the usual business.
Yes, Mitchell and Sam are going to be moving soon, so they could use some extra dollars.
Exactly.
So this is a new revenue stream we're working on.
Exactly.
Isn't this exciting on Watch with Jen? I'm just inventing stuff.
Yeah, we're just figuring it out in the moment here. It's very exciting.
Yes. No, but this is such a treat. I was excited to talk about Elliot Gould with you because I know that he is, you know, one of your loves of your life. Mine too. When I was doing a little bit of research on California Split, it was bringing up some of the actors who were in the running for the lead roles. And it was like Peter Falk, Robert De Niro, and Elliot Gould. And I'm like, oh my God, it's basically Jen's taste in foods.
Yeah.
We're all going to be in this movie and Mitchell's as well. So why don't you tell me to begin with, have you always been into Gould? Is this a new thing? And what do you think it is about Gould that you're drawn to?
Yeah, for sure. He's an interesting one because he's not like somebody like a De Niro or like a Pacino. Those are people that I kind of discovered. Like, I'm sure I saw some of their other movies, like some of the ones that are like Rocky and Bullwinkle or whatever that were coming out like around the time that I would like Meet the Parents was probably like the first like De Niro movie that I would have seen, I would think, just based on like age. But like they have the trajectory where they're still like leading men and still kind of doing in the same vein of stuff that they've been doing from back in the heyday. And then you kind of like go through the hits. Like when you're like my age, like I'm 34. So like going through discovering like proper, you know, serious film or whatever, like as a teenager, I'm diving into like Dog Day Afternoon and Godfather and kind of like those hits. But Gould is somebody that I came to a little bit later, because like his big ones don't have quite the outsized reputation of some of those movies. But because of where his career ended up going, I definitely was introduced to him through Friends growing up, because Friends was like staple in the household. My mom loved Friends.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, we were watching it like regularly. And so I became familiarized with him through him playing Monica and Ross's dad on that show, and just finding he has like this real like warmth to him in that show, and like really being drawn to him. Like, he's so funny in it. He is like absolutely hysterical anytime he comes up. And I just remember like distinctly feeling like anytime he would pop, because he's only in like 20 episodes throughout like the entire 10 seasons, but anytime he would pop up, feeling that like excitement when like, you know, one of your favorite like guest characters shows up in a show. And then definitely like the Ocean's movies were big for me when they came out. So like I kind of was introduced to him more through that like later stage of his career, where he had that a little bit more of like a laid back, a little bit more of like a like dad kind of energy to him. But in the Ocean's movies, he also is interestingly channeling a little bit of the kind of ghoul that we'll get into here, like the older version of, you know, these sorts
of excellent point. Yes.
Yeah. And so it really wasn't until I like maybe my like early to mid 20s where I really got into Robert Altman. And that's kind of where I got into more this era of ghoul that we're talking, that we're going to be talking about, like the 70s kind of era, when he was really at his peak of like the TV Guide cover that everybody knows and loves, of him being sexy as hell with a Muppet. And like, he was on like Time, like the cover of Time as well, as like one of the biggest movie stars of that era. And he's not really, he doesn't have like the cultural cachet that somebody like a Pacino or De Niro has, where it's kind of carried over and like everybody still knows them. And so he feels like this exciting little like secret, like it almost feels more like special, because like, oh, I get to love this guy that like not everybody, you know, immediately goes to. So like, it doesn't, like, of course Al Pacino is one of my like five favorite actors of all time, but like, that doesn't feel cool to say that, you know.
It's cool to be able to say Gould and Falk, because I will say, and Mitchell, you are proof of this, that the people that are into Gould are usually cooler than your average bear. Friends like Peter Avellino and Jed Ayers and Travis Woods and, you know, the people who are really Gould heads, Kim Morgan. These are wonderful, like very creative people. And Mitchell is one of them as well, someone who loves Gould. And also, Mitchell, from memory, you just completed, speaking of Altman, a Blu-ray essay, if I remember correctly. Was it for Thieves Like Us?
Yeah, yeah. Not a Gould picture, but one definitely right at the same time that we're going to be talking about Gould. Because, I mean, Gould did five movies with Altman, and like they were all kind of, other than his kind of cameo in The Player, they're all kind of around this similar area, the 70s. So we'll talk about Long Goodbye and California Split in more detail. But yeah, Thieves Like Us came out right after both of those two, in 74 with Keith Carradine and Shelley Duvall, which is a Depression era kind of bank robber picture that's more focused on like, and we'll get into this with Altman, but like, one of my things that I love about Altman so much is that basically all of his movies are hangout movies. He does so many different genres, but they all still like nestle into this area of just watching characters hanging out and interacting. And he isn't really driven by genre as much as he's always driven by character. And I love that about him. And so, yeah, thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, Cinematograph put out a 4K Blu-ray of Thieves Like Us, and I got to write one of the essays for the booklet for that, which was really cool.
I am so excited. I was just like over the moon when you announced it. So I need to get that and read it, because yes, I would love to see what you wrote. And also, I know you are a fellow Soderbergh head. So it's interesting when you think of Soderbergh and Altman, because they are kind of hangout directors and they both kind of gravitated to Gould. So again, this overlap of people that are into Elliot Gould. I kind of agree with you. I loved The Long Goodbye, like the first time I saw it, because it was so anachronistic, you know, the Rip Van Marlowe, we'll get into all of that, everything it was doing. And so I loved Gould in that. But then I would see him in other films and it didn't really, you know, click yet. But something about California Split. I had seen it decades earlier. I think I enjoyed it, but didn't, it just kind of went in one eye out the other, essentially. And then in the pandemic, it became weirdly like a movie I kept revisiting. And just like I gravitated to, speaking of fall, Columbo in the pandemic, I also gravitated to Gould and California Split. So for me, just like you were saying, you had to be a little bit older and kind of tap into the energy, what he is putting out there. So I'm excited to go into all of that with you. And when we were trying to figure out how to talk about Elliot Gould, because there is, he's basically very synonymous with these Altman pictures, we thought it would be interesting to start with The Silent Partner, which is a thriller that we both love. I've covered it on the podcast. I talked to Ted Griffin about it when we did an episode on Curtis Hanson, who wrote the script and also did some uncredited direction at the end when the studio wanted some more gratuitous nudity and violence, and it went against the director's wishes. Curtis Hanson just kind of like stepped up to do that. It is a great film. It's definitely, people are saying, like from that tax shelter era of the Canadian movies, and it's like the good one. And it's scary as hell. It is Gould, as you don't really picture him. He's more understated. He's like more of an everyman. He's not kind of like this guy you just want to hang with. He's sinister, he's sleazy, he kind of uses and connives, and he is working in a bank and finds out that Christopher Plummer actually wanted to knock over the bank. He finds like a draft on a slip that someone was going to hold up the bank, and knows it's coming, and figures out how to get away with pre-robbing the bank, or figuring out how to shortchange the robber, and then gets in hot water and has to like keep his head above water. So nobody at the bank is any of the wiser, the criminal, but of course everybody kind of, goes in on Gould, and it's fascinating. So tell me about your history with this one.
Yeah, definitely. I'm really glad that we are talking about this one because it is like such a like one of the things that I love about Gould is he's such a distinct sort of presence in movies. Like there's nobody like Gould. And like you and me, we love character actors who can kind of bleed through so many different kinds of roles. Gould, like he's so interesting in the sense that like there are a lot of great performances and a lot of great actors, but where there are like roles that they take on, you could swap in another actor and like that actor, it would be like a different performance, but it would still be like maybe they could capture the same like tenor of like what that performance is going to be. I feel like with Gould, any performance that you see him in is like if you put somebody else in that role, it would be completely different. You know
Oh,
what I mean?
100%. Yep.
And but like that. Like I was reading Roger Ebert's review of Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, where he described Gould. I think he said he described him as more of a personality than like a
Yes.
star, I
I
think it
always
was.
loved that. He is a personality. Yeah.
Exactly. It's such an interesting phrasing, and like in some ways you could almost read it as like pejorative because he's saying he's like not a star, but it is true that he's not like this marquee kind of thing that you gravitate towards.
No.
But within that personality, there still is. Like there are people who I see as like more personalities than actors, where like you kind of slot them into a movie and like you kind of know what you're gonna get, right? They're kind of replicating the
Yes.
same thing, and like that
Yep.
can work sometimes, but like some like you just they're not people that like you they're like your favorite actors, right? Because like they're just kind of operating in the same arena, and
Yeah.
the arena it works sometimes like when they're cast right, but Gould as like a personality, he still is able to shift so much. And even within the three films that we're specifically focusing on, they're such different kind of characters. And I love in The Silent Partner, as you were saying, he's like effort, like he's kind of like a little bit repressed, he's a little bit more
Yeah.
meek, but he is really conniving and really smart and really methodical. And I just love watching the way that his brain, like you can see the gears turning in his head as he's seeing, you know, he's seeing what's going on. He's seeing the Santa Claus that Christopher Plummer's playing, like trying to pull off this heist, and then he gets botched. But then Gould's character, he sees that, and instead of wanting to go to the police, wanting to, you know, get this guy caught, his immediate instinct is to, like, wait for him to come back and figure out his own way to kind of double up on the heist so that he can get away with the money in a way that makes it look like the actual robber got away with it. And it's such an exciting movie to watch. I hadn't seen it until, I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago was the first time that I had seen it. And I think that I came to it, I was a big fan of Gould. I really love Christopher Plummer as well. And I think I saw it somewhere on a list of like Christmas crime kind of movies.
Which I love is, Christmas crime movies.
Yes, it's a subgenre that I love a lot. LA Confidential is a great one. And I mean, like a lot of Shane Black movies are good ones.
Oh, yeah.
Even like Reindeer Games is a movie that I have a soft spot for, Frankenheimer's movie. And so I think I watched it around Christmas time a few years back. And it is a really great Christmas movie. I love the setting. I love the idea of, like, it's such an ingenious idea, a Santa Claus, like Santa Claus as your costuming, your disguise for pulling off a heist. It makes me think of like Point Break and, you know, the Dead Presidents kind of like vibe going on there. Like, it's not the wearing, you know, pantyhose over the head or a ski mask or whatever. Like, it's a great disguise, like, to be a mall Santa and pull off a heist in a mall bank, which is really interesting as well. It's just so exciting. It's such an exciting watch, and it's so much nastier than I would have expected it to be.
It is so gnarly. Terrifying. Yes, as it continues, because he starts out under this disguise as a mall Santa, and then you realize he's a sexual deviant. Unfortunately, it is part of that, you know, cadre of films where we have a cross-dresser as the main villain. But more than that, with Plummer, because there's so much misogyny and so much hate and so much self-hatred, he's just scary as hell. And I kind of think about how Curtis Hanson has talked about, like, the movie Bad Influence, kind of really heavily influencing when he would later direct that picture, but also something like The Bedroom Window a little bit, which it has kind of a Hitchcockian plot, but there are moments of, like, just sheer terror in that, and also sinister terror in Bad Influence, but you really see it in this movie. It is scary as hell. And I also love how we think right along with Gould, like, how is he going to get away with this when he, you know, there's a safe deposit box key and he puts it in the jam in the fridge, and then, you know, his housekeeper gets rid of it. And then there's stuff where there's a great scene where Christopher Plummer calls him outside from a phone booth, and then he's terrified he's going to come up to the door, and we see him methodically push over millions of pieces of furniture in front of that door. And Plummer is able to, like, just with his eyes go up to the door. I mean, it is scary. And it did get, you know, Canada and the studio wanted to kind of go the extra mile. Some of the ways that they use the women in the movie and the nudity is a little much. And there's a beheading scene that happens that is just so freaky. But overall, as far as the actual twists and turns and the way that the plot kind of goes in different directions than you're expecting, it's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it is like the level of violence that it goes to is really jarring, and it makes sense that that's kind of the spot where Daryl Duke, the original director, like, pushed back and was like, I'm not going to do that.
No.
And even Gould, like, the way that he talked, like, Gould is, like, he's always been such a professional and, like, not, like, dogging on people he's worked with. He definitely has, like, disparaged some of the movies that he's done. Like, I was reading one of Kim Morgan's, like, many, like, Kim Morgan has interviewed him so many times, and, like, they're always such fantastic interviews. And there is one where they mention Matilda, which is, like, a movie from around this time, or maybe in the 80s. I can't remember the decade it came out in, but, like, where Gould, like, trains a kangaroo to become a boxer. And the kangaroo is played by a man in a big kangaroo suit. And Gould was not not super complimentary about that movie for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But
gee, I wonder.
Yeah. When he talks about like the kind of ousting of Daryl Duke from the final sections of this and how Curtis Hanson came in and kind of did those shoots, like he talks about it in a very professional way where he's like, this is what the studio wanted, so like I did it to get the job done. But he almost like talks about it in like almost a remorseful way of like, you can tell that he didn't really want the movie to go that way either. And it sounds like him and Daryl Duke were really good friends and he really liked working with Daryl Duke. So he felt like kind of shitty about that. But, and I do think that that's kind of where the movie, it does lose me a little bit when it goes like the level of gnarliness, the beheading, especially like, we don't need to do all this, particularly when the movie's treatment of women in general is not like, they're not the most dimensional characters in the world.
Even in a supporting capacity, like the bimbo at the bank, essentially.
Oh my god, with she starts shacking up with John Candy, which is really interesting. But which he's quite fun in it too. But yeah, the reason it works, right, is because Gould and Plummer are both so excellent, and seeing their kind of tete-a-tete like throughout the whole thing is really gripping. The phone booth scene that you mentioned where Plummer like calls him from outside is the first, like their first interaction is when Plummer's holding up the bank and Gould kind of gets, you know, gets the up on him there without Plummer realizing it. But that interaction where they're seeing each other from Gould's like on the second story, like apartment, looking down at the street where Plummer is in the phone booth looking up at him. And it is so tense. And that's like the moment where you see like that the fear and panic come like taking over Gould, like you're talking about. And I think it's such like, it's such a nerve-wracking sequence. And it's like, it's this moment where he now, this character is realizing like the gravity of what he's done and that he can't turn back from it. And that's one of the things that I love in like noir and neo-noir is like when a character is making this, you know, dangerous decision to kind of propel their status in life in a way. And it's exciting for them. They get the thrill of that moment. You can tell that he's kind of getting off on doing this. Like it's very exciting for him to get the money. Like he feels like he's, you know, he's holding his body a little bit different. The he gets to be on the news. They're talking to him on the news and everything. And he has this little secret, right? Like, cause he's
talking about the banker. More confidence with women. And
exactly. Exactly. With Susanna York's character, he starts dating and everything. And and then Plummer gets to him. He hears that voice. He hears the way he talks to him. And it's like, oh shit. Like this is what I'm actually dealing with now. Yep. And like, that's so exciting. And then it's just great watching them then kind of volleying back and forth because they're both such smart characters.
Yes.
Which is just, it's great. It's like the Hitchcockian aspect of it all is so exciting. Like watching, like there were a lot of contemporaneous reviews that compared to the Hitchcock, which I think makes a lot of sense. And it's just a thrill to watch smart people battling each other like this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is such a good one. This is a film that is stellar to watch around the holidays for sure. I love that you enjoy holiday crime because I think it is a really cool hybrid. And with the same filmmaker of Black Christmas and, you know, like this, these are great Canadian thrillers to watch around the holidays for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And then as far as it kind of goes against that Gould mystique, that hangout quality, because he is super smart in this. And in A Long Goodbye, this is a man who kind of just like stumbles into it. He's dogged. He's going on intuition and his interactions, you know, and that's how he kind of figures it out. He has to just kind of go around LA and see what happens. In this movie, he is extremely able to put together the pieces much better. And so it's an interesting contrast when you think about these earlier films that he made with Robert Altman. So talking about the two Altman movies, do you remember which one you saw first? Is there one you want to go into first? Should we talk about the Long Goodbye, that whole thing, or...
Yeah. Let's definitely start with Long Goodbye. That was the one that I watched first was Long Goodbye. Long Goodbye. Yeah. I watched when I think the first Altman that I ever saw, oddly, was Three Women. I think even remember what it was that like sparked that for me. Maybe it was Sissy Spacek or Shelley Duvall, but like that. I mean, that's such an odd.
That is such a unique pick. I mean, for me, it was The Player, which is fascinating because Gould is Gould in that movie. But I was a kid and my parents like, let's watch The Player. Jen likes mysteries and movies. And so I became very obsessed with that. And then I, you know, wound up eventually getting to Long Goodbye. But I love that you went with a deeper cut there because Three Women is a film that I highly recommend. I wish more people talked about, and especially when it comes to Altman. But then again, when you say, what's your favorite Robert Altman movie? It's like, which day? Because you can have five totally different films the next day. Exactly.
Yeah, the run of his through the 70s especially is like out of control. And I think that after when I saw Three Women, it like immediately like landed in my like top 10 of all time. It's still if I had to like bullet, you know, gun to the head, if I had to pick, like Three Women would still be my favorite, I think. But from seeing that, I dove into kind of more of the 70s Altman. I was like, who is this director? I need to see more of him. So I went into like Nashville and McCabe and Mrs. Miller. And that led me to The Long Goodbye, which I like knowing what it's about. And I think having seen like the Bogart Marlowe before, at the very least, like I had like this expectation of what, you know, a Philip Marlowe, like a neo-noir detective story was going to be. Yeah. And watching it, It was such an exciting like experience watching it because it's kind of one of those things where you almost feel like you're discovering what the movie is as you're watching it, because it starts off so different from what you would expect. I mean, it starts off him getting woken up by his cat at 3 a.m. and he, you know, lights a cigarette off the wall, and the first like 10 minutes are him just kind of traversing town to get cat food for this cat that eventually is just going to run away. And like, we see him, you know, we see his neighbors, these, you know, young
girls.
Women. Yeah, exactly. And I love how Altman described the movie as Marlowe in this, as if he was like asleep for 20 years and he had just been woken up. And
yeah, he's driving an old car from like the 40s, 50s.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's wearing, you know, a very nice, you know, dark blue suit, whereas everybody else is wearing, you know, white flowing sort of garb, like very like 70s, you know, California hippie vibe.
He's the smoker. Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. And it is just like, it's so interesting watching him navigate this world and him trying to like go through it with this old established, you know, concept of right and wrong, and like obviously the people that you trust are going to do good things. His pal Terry Lennox, who gets, you know, into some heat, and he immediately is, you know, standing up for him. He would never murder his wife or anything like that. And it really is this like thrilling notion of him discovering just how messy, how amorphous morality is in this world.
Yeah,
and
how
so much
dark
of
the world has gotten.
Yeah, exactly. In the 70s, like it's very post-Vietnam, like America. And I love the reckoning with that. And I love the sort of subversion of noir and this idea that there isn't, you know, clear lines between good and evil, or even like a clear sense of what the plot is, what the mystery is. So much of this movie from like scene to scene is him being bombarded with new characters who are furious with him, and he has no idea who they are or what they even want, and he's trying to figure it out in the moment. But it all has this very like, he has this like laconic, like Gould, like energy to him, where he almost is like, he's kind of rubbing it off the shoulder a little bit in all of these scenes. Like, he's taking the piss out of like so many of these characters who are smashing bottles across, you know, their girlfriend's faces in front of him. And he still is like, he still is kind of like pushing, but like volleying back at them with like the dialogue. It's such a fun watch, even when like in moments where you can't really make sense of what's happening, like it like that's part of the thrill of it, is you're really put into this guy's perspective and you just feel so thrown for a loop.
Yeah, I think that is actually the most jarring moment in the film, and the one that kind of does wake him up to this idea of, oh my God, this guy who purports to love this beautiful girl did something like that, and maybe makes him think a little bit more about Terry. But yeah, overall, I mean, he is someone, he's the shaggy dog routine of approaching people and just kind of stumbling in and out. You brought up the opening sequence. I love how it is. He does wake up, and everybody, when we wake up, we're not completely with it right away. You know, it takes a while to get out of bed and figure out what you're going to do. And I love how he has to try to, he doesn't really want to try to trick his cat, but he has to trick his cat because they're out of the Curry brand cat food. And, you know, he keeps saying it's okay with me, but things really aren't okay. And this is post-Vietnam, and the world is changing. And also, this idea, I think it kind of goes back. It was like a story Altman's friend told him about the cat food that he and Lee Brackett put into this script. And you do have Lee Brackett, who, you know, co-wrote the original, and also one of the great hangout movies with Rio Bravo, which they just kind of sit around and talk and that kind of thing. And it's a camaraderie. And you do have this idea of him trying to trick a cat or putting one over on somebody he loves. And then he goes home, and what's the first thing that happens is somebody he loves, Terry, tries to put one over on him. And so this idea of he is kind of getting the short end of the stick, or just like his cat. And so I do love that, you know, his suit is crumpled. He's trying to fit in, like the girls who are topless all the time and doing the yoga and stuff. He goes and runs them errands, but he doesn't like try to hit on them, or it's not like Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, you know, Joel over there talking about making it and wearing his like long beads and grossing you out. Like, it's a different energy, to speak of another Gould movie. It isn't that movie. And it isn't, you can imagine Elliot Gould did very well. I mean, he was married to Barbra Streisand, who in her bio, it just drives me nuts, said something like, "I'd always been attracted to handsome men, but there was something about Elliot Gould," and you're like, "What the hell, lady? Elliot Gould is very sexy." But this is kind of, I would say, the most Gould performance for me is California Split. But this sort of establishes that energy, and yeah, I love it for all those reasons.
Yeah, no, I agree that I think that when I think of Gould and like his energy, I definitely gravitate toward like California Split feels like sort of that like Rosetta Stone of like Elliot Gould. But like this is, I think Long Goodbye is probably my favorite performance of his. It feels like he just feels so like discombobulated. I think Altman talked about it, like the whole movie is almost through like a haze of pot, and like you can feel like the cinematography like has like this like almost like a thick like air to it where you can see him kind of like trying to push through it. And because it is Altman, like it is, he's using this like roving sort of camera work that keeps us like always feeling like we're like voyeurs, like, you know, assessing the scene. We're not like, sometimes we're not even, you know, looking at where the dialogue is happening, the conversations that are happening. And a lot of scenes, there's the great scene with Gould and Sterling Hayden's character where they're sitting
Balls,
out
baby, balls. Yes, sorry.
where they're sitting out like on sort of the balcony of his like this huge estate of his, which I didn't know until reading, like doing research for this, that that was like Altman's place where they filmed,
I
where
know.
Hayden's
Yeah, I love
character
that.
lived. And like that was a scene where Gould talks about like he knew like the bits of information that needed to like be established in the scene, but it was like very much like improvised them talking. I know like Altman talks about like Sterling Hayden was basically like drunk and like on pot and like various other drugs like the entire time that they were filming this, which I think adds to the sort of mystique of the character that he's playing, who is somebody that is very like, you're not sure what to make of him. And there's like this air because of Sterling Hayden, especially at this time in his career, he's so big that like there is like an almost like an intimidation to him, but also like a woundedness to him as well. It's such a great, like the whole movie is really packed with such fascinating characters. Henry Gibson as
Oh my
the
God,
doctor
amazing.
at like the clinic where Sterling Hayden's character is initially staying, like so nasty, so creepy. creepy.
Yeah, it's like the precursor to The Burbs, which is a film I grew up loving.
Exactly. Like he's creepy. So good at playing sinister, and then he's great in Nashville too. Like he's so
good with
Altman. But even like just like everybody throughout this movie, Mark Rydell as Marty Augustine, the gangster that we were talking about who smashes the bottle on his girlfriend's face, like he's terrifying. But he comes in with like this like crazy energy. He's talking about he's ransacking Marlo's place and he starts going on a rant about how he gets like private tennis lessons 3 times a week and demands that Marlo punches him in the gut to show like how good of a shape he's in. And I just love these little like character asides. Yeah, exactly. There's the security guard, right? Who like doing impressions of like Jimmy Stewart and like Barbara Stanwyck and like Marlo's being tailed by some guys and he like kind of eggs the security guard to give like a Walter Brennan impression to the guy. And it's like what even is that character in this movie? It's so much fun. And it like keeps you on your toes of like figuring out like what even this movie is the entire time. It's such a fun ride, even with it being like at its core really sinister and really bleak and this really like dark sort of like examination of where America is at this time and all these characters who are, you know, you think that you, I think Gould described the movie as ultimately being about how you can't lie to life. Mm-hmm. And I think you see that through so much of it. Like he is a character, Marlo is a character who thinks he understands what the world is and he is constantly being hit with this knowledge that he actually doesn't know shit about what the world is, and he's kind of like always on the back foot, which I love Gould on the back foot. Like he's at his best when he's kind of like stumbling, trying to pick up the pieces.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I think it is such a brilliant film. It's one of my favorite. It's hard to say what your favorite Altmans are, but this would definitely always be in that top five. I think this is another one where you would probably say like best Altman movies versus favorites. And for me, favorite would be like California Split is a favorite, but best, I do have to say that Long Goodbye is up there. And I think, it is sort of showing the way that the world is changing. I love when that happens. Altman was always doing that. McCabe and Mrs. Miller is kind of a Western, but it's not really a Western. Yeah. Nashville, sort of a movie about the South, but is it really, The Player, kind of a Hollywood film, but it's not. The Company, he didn't know anything about ballet, but he's following around ballet. I always thought it was interesting when he just sort of approached these things with an open mind. And when I was doing a little bit of reading, Bogdanovich had turned it down. There were a couple other directors, but he suggested Altman. And the reason Altman wanted to stay was because of the ending, which was so anti-everything Marlowe. I don't know. Have you read a lot of Chandler? I had read The Long Goodbye, I read The Little Sister. I read The Big Sleep. I read a couple other Chandlers, but like years ago. So it had been a while. But I do remember this is quite like a monster book. I mean, there's so much plot and it's completely different. Yeah. So
yeah.
I find that interesting.
I've only read The Big Sleep, which I had read like in kind of like my early 20s. But yeah, like that was something that totally makes sense that in reading that about kind of Lee Brackett's original script and that Altman, he like the two things that kind of got him on board were the ending and the idea of casting Gould. Like he talks about there's a special feature on the Blu-ray where he talks about it and like that he wasn't super interested, but then because he like was like Marlowe's been done, you know, Bogart's done him, like, you know, we like Marlowe's like he's out there. And then the suggestion was, what about like we're thinking Elliot Gould as Marlowe, and Altman was like, oh well, now that's interesting, like that's an interesting kind of take on it. And but yeah, like this is almost like the antithesis of The Silent Partner, where The Silent Partner, like the ending is like the one area where I kind of like balk a little bit. But The Long Goodbye, the ending of The Long Goodbye cements this as I think like an absolute masterpiece. And like Marlowe's kind of one of the things that I love about the long goodbye subverting noir tropes is that so many noirs are where like the detective is the smartest guy in the room and he kind of knows everything that's going on, and we're watching this sort of like genius at work, like putting all the pieces together. Mm-hmm. And The Long Goodbye is this sort of like haphazard, almost like clueless, like putz sometimes, you know, he's really like just kind of like hazing through it, stumbling through it all. And the end is where he finally fully recognizes the sort of scale of everything that's been going on and this
the
kind
evil.
Of ruse that's mm-hmm. been, exactly. Yeah, the ruse has been pulled over him the whole time. And his response is pull out his gun and, you know, pull back the trigger. And I just think that that is like, it's such a damning statement about like, that's really kind of like, that's the only answer that you can pull like at that moment. Like, I mean, you can't blame the guy for making the decision that he makes after everything he's been through.
Yeah, and there's something to that, that the film gets progressively darker. You know, the scene with Sterling Hayden walking into the water, and also the humiliation, like some of these characters that we come across along the way. I think it's a film that a lot of people go into just thinking it's a fun hangout movie, and it is fun on some level, but also there's a lot of melancholy and a lot to the film when you start thinking about when it came out in American history. But yeah, I think this was a good one to sort of establish the Gould energy and the way that he collaborated so well with Robert Altman. And that brings us to California Split. I do not love gambling, but I love gambling pictures. So this is one of those great movies. I mean, just the beginning alone, you have Gould at a table just like talking and saying shit like, you know, put that guy in a horror show. The man is an ass. He doesn't know how to play poker. Like, it just immediately feels like, what am I even watching right now? Like, who is he talking to? What is going on? And then it just gets progressively, we're let in and seduced and befriend and charmed by this Elliot Gould, this sort of mystery figure, just like George Segal is. And yeah, it's a good one. So talk to me about this one.
Yeah, no, I... It was funny that you mentioned kind of like watching this multiple times, like throughout kind of the pandemic, and that being like a one that you kept coming back to. Because for me, the early days pandemic is when I first saw the California Split, was like summer 2020. Because I think that it is one that was like not available, like, you know, not super accessible for a really long time. I think because like music rights or whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And then it ended up kind of randomly showing up on Amazon Prime. And I saw a lot of people talking about it being, you know, one of these great Altmans. And it was one that had always slipped through me even within this great decade of his. And so I checked it out. And like you were saying, it is one that it also, like, I hadn't watched any Altman in a while before watching it. It had been like a couple of years, mm-hmm. I think, since I had revisited any of Altman's. And he generally has, you know, an aesthetic that can take a little bit of getting used to. That's sort of the audio track overlaying and all of that, and sort of just like kind of this great thing that he does where he just places you into an environment and he lets you catch up with it. Like, he's not concerned with trying to like introduce you to all of these characters with exposition and very like, this is this scene and this is who this character is and this is them at this moment in their life. It's just very like I love the beginning of California Split, where it almost sets you up into thinking that Gould and George Segal are, you know, like the very typical gambling, like con man kind of thing, where it's
you're not sure at first. You're like, do they know each other? What is happening?
Exactly. Yeah. You're like, these guys are pulling a thing. You know, they're working together. And then it turns out that they actually don't know each other at all. And they meet at the bar, and Gould's almost like pestering Segal like to hang out and to be friends. And he just has this very like, Gould in this movie has such a great energy of like, he tips right to the edge of like being obnoxious, but still stays on the side of charming, I think. Mm-hmm. And he really, like, you really gravitate towards him. And it is like, he was a huge gambler, like at this time, like Altman was a big gambler. Like, this is like the world that these guys kind of like lived in.
And Joseph Walsh, the writer.
Yeah, exactly.
And the writer.
The actor who then like who talks about how like he wasn't getting the roles that he wanted, and so like he ended up like writing that like that's like such a classic like great like writer or even like actor director story where like they're not getting the stuff that
generate
they want.
Generate your own material.
Yeah, exactly. Make it yourself. And so they like they were all so enmeshed in this world. They understood this world, and I think as we were saying when talking about The Long Goodbye, this feels like the most Gould. Like this is the most like rat-a-tat kind of energy. Like he's not slowing down for a second. He's so like silly and sly and really fun, but like almost too fun that like you're like this guy can't take shit seriously, and like he keeps kind of cascading into these like mishaps where like things keep getting worse and worse, but Siegel is still drawn towards him. And I love the casting of Siegel because they talk about like Altman and Gould and Siegel talk about it where like Siegel was so out of his element like making this
movie. Thought he was an octopus. He's all over me, like
fighting for my life here. Which so fits the character where he is like he's the straight-laced guy, you know, he's much more of like a neophyte into the gambling world, and Gould almost like seduces him into it, but he has like this natural like knack for it. But you see him as like a guy who is more put together, and slowly over the course of the movie, he's like, he's ditching his work, you know, and he's, you know, his former relationships are kind of crumbling apart because he's getting so invested into this gambling world. And I'm like you, like I really like playing poker, but I hate gambling, which is like, I like playing it as like a game. It's very fun, but I don't like investing too much money. I get really stressed out about the gambling, about the money aspect of gambling. I would go to casinos with my friends and like they would play like roulette or something and they would like hit once and I would be like, yo, you gotta bail now. You gotta get out now. Like you made some money. You gotta get out now. Like I just, it stresses me out too much.
I agree. I actually grew up with a guy in my neighborhood who wrote a book on seven card stud poker, and I'm one of the people he dedicated it to, so I'm a Jenny. And I think it's really funny because like the joke was when we would play poker in like high school, my friends would stake me because I would just lose everything within like a couple. I have no poker face, and so I hated poker. But my dad's big, he doesn't really give me dude advice. You know, just like nice guys are good. But his whole thing was just don't date a gambler, Jen. Like whatever you do, it's the worst addiction because like don't. And because he had on my mom's side of the family, they're like really smart at math and they can count cards.
Yeah.
And one of my uncles was in Vegas. My dad was sitting at the table with them watching. He went up like tens of thousands of dollars and stayed long enough because he could count what he was doing. It stayed long enough, he gave it right all back, and my dad was just like losing every, like probably took like 20 years off my dad's life. and like it bothered my uncle, but he was, well, I didn't have that money to begin with, and
walk
away. So yeah, gambling has always kind of been a thing that like just scares the hell out of me. But I love that energy between the two of them. I covered this movie once with Leslie Byron Pitt. It was an episode on Human Connection a couple of years ago. And we were talking about the friendship. And what's so great is Gould's character does that thing like you would hear in, you know, How to Win Friends and Influence, one of those type of books where you say the other person's name a lot. And it becomes like hilarious the number of times, William, that he just like is all over George Siegel, like just saying his name and doing these things. I've heard the story two different ways where he called Gould like an octopus. I've heard it that it was Joseph Walsh who gave him this advice. And then I've also heard it as, nope, it was Robert Altman. So I don't know who, but said like, don't try to keep up, just do your own thing. Like, because it is that contrast and that energy in a scene where like, you know, the hat's a very big clue, like five guesses where it gets dirty then. And there's like this joke that plays out, but you need the contrast between the two of them. And you can actually see them kind of strike a balance that you don't expect, which is good. You can't fake chemistry, and these two have it.
I can't remember, I was reading something like recently where somebody, maybe it was kind of when it came out on Amazon Prime, because people were talking about it more and more then. And it kind of routinely will play on like Criterion Channel now, which is really nice too. That's where I rewatched it a week or so ago in preparing for this. And but I saw somebody compare it to Mikey and Nikki and the kind of Falk and Cassavetes relationship in that. Yeah. And I think that's a really smart comparison, because it is like, it is like almost like this like sibling and kind of like combative but loving relationship between the two. And you really like, it is one of the great movies about male friendship and how like you kind of latch onto these people that like, even when you know they're not good for you, there is something really like fun and exciting. And there is like such a love there still. And I think that we see it too in the relationship with gambling in the movie in general, where like, it beats you down, but it can pick you back up like the next day. And one of the things that is so thrilling about gambling for people is that notion of like, on any given day, you can come at, you know, you walk into a room, you can come out having lost everything or having won like beyond your wildest imagination. And like that itch to just kind of see what happens with that. Like, you see them go, like it starts with cards, but you see them, you know, they go to the racetrack, like they're gambling, just like they're making up little bets between each other, like on nonsense. and there is like such a romance to the gambling aspect. And I think that that's something that's really important about what the movie's doing, where it is like, it's not romanticizing it, but it is like, it is portraying an understanding of why these people would love what they're doing. Like, there is something really like
addictive,
freeing and addictive about it. Yeah. And I love, just in terms of their relationship, there's this one scene where they're having a moment where they're having a tiff. And I think it's that moment where like they've been separated for a while, right? And there's like some resentment over that separation. There's like some abandoned, it's like Siegel's character feels very abandoned.
Yeah.
And they kind of come back, and Gould does this routine that he calls the one-armed piccolo player.
Yes,
and yeah.
The one
exactly.
I was mentioning.
Yeah, exactly. And like that scene, like he said, like that's such a great encapsulation of their entire relationship, where it starts,
and you get Siegel actually laughing.
Yeah, exactly. It starts with Siegel like so like his character is like hurt. so mad, so hurt, so like, I'm done with this dude. And within the span of a minute, he like does a, you know, a little raunchy routine, and he wins him over, and he's laughing, and he's back on board, and they're just like right back in it. And I feel like that parallels well like the relationship with gambling for a lot of people too, where it's like, you can be so, or I mean any addiction really, you know, where like you can be so done with it, you hit this low, you hit this rock bottom, but then you have one moment where that feeling feels really good again, and you're just right back into it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that dynamic and that chemistry, and also what it says about gambling. Like, also, it's a love story. I mean, earlier on in the bar when they're trying to figure out Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, and also just the weird environment. And just like in The Long Goodbye, these people that are kind of floating in and out of their world are very strange. We hear snippets of conversation. It was like one of the first movies with 8-track, and also just like Long Goodbye, he wanted to have a constantly moving camera, so we were more of a voyeur, which also just became an Altman thing, you know, zooming around Gosford Park. Yes, that is kind of what he does, and we can hear little pieces of things. This movie really get the full scope of that idea before, you know, Nashville or something, where he was really doing the experimentation. So you see Altman kind of doing that a little bit more. I think this is just a fascinating one. My favorite scene, I was trying to think, you know, when you brought the piccolo player, definitely my favorite quote is, you don't throw oranges on an escalator. Like, but my favorite scene, because it just feels, and I think it is improvised, is when they're in the back room and Gould is sizing up everyone at the table, and he just like, you know, goes from person to person and like Mr. Cha-Cha, or, you know, he comes up with a backstory for everybody, because You see that in another film, speaking of Curtis Hanson, that I love so much, like Wonder Boys. That's what writers do. They look at people and come up with a story. Actors do the same thing. Like, I've noticed actor friends will pick up something that I do or something that I say, or they'll do a little impression of me like 2 seconds later that I don't even realize I do. And so I love that sort of idea with Gould's character. And again, this is why, because first you're like, well, if Siegel's going to be the one playing, he's the smarter one, and he is the smarter one. But he needs that energy. He needs him to make him laugh, kind of feed him into that, and also get into the psyche of these people. And so, yeah, I think it's just a wonderful film. Yeah,
it's so that I looked back after rewatching it. I looked back at like the review that I wrote for it on Letterboxd when I first saw it, and I specifically talked about that exact scene as being like one of the great moments that like not only like captures their dynamic and how much these two guys need each other, but also like what a great representation that is of Gould's like brilliance in this movie. Yes. And like everything, like all the charisma that he's bringing, and it is like, it's so fun too, because it is like he needs him there. He needs him to kind of like settle him in that kind of way. But also like within that same sequence, like later on, like he's telling him he needs to leave. Like he needs to get out of there. Like he almost like sometimes he can exist as like a cooler to Siegel's character. And he's like, you're ruining my luck. Like that whole aspect, that aspect to it is so fascinating too. And the other thing that I really highlighted in my, initial kind of response to it is the ending, which I think is like absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. Gould saying, it doesn't mean a fucking thing, right? Like after Siegel, it's so huge. I think I did like the inflation calculator. It's like almost like $500,000. Like he wins. And it's still just like, it's completely like, it means nothing to him. Like he still feels like this void. It doesn't register anything, because the thrill isn't in winning. The thrill is almost more in losing, but the thrill is in the risk. Like that's where it is. That's the thing that you're addicted to. You're not addicted to winning. You're addicted to that feeling of it all being up for grabs, and you have no way like where it's going to kind of come down. And so he comes out at the end of it and still just feels so empty. And then what, Gould just goes and cashes out the winnings, and like he's, you know, life just keeps moving on, which I think is so great. And so many great, like so many Altman movies are so great at that too, where like we just are experiencing characters within a snapshot of their lives, and like where we don't get any introduction to them, and when we leave them, they're just gonna kind of keep going on being like how they were, like as we experience them.
Like the end of MASH, which is another film with Gould. Yeah, for sure. Because I did rewatch. I don't love MASH as much as other people do. I think it's a good film. But it's
I'm not as big on it either, personally.
It's a film where we're gonna leave those people and they're gonna keep getting into adventures. Other Elliot Gould movies or performances that you want to be sure to mention people should seek out?
Yeah, honestly a lot of great ones from the 70s. Like the 70s, I think, is very peak Gould. One that we were considering covering was Little Murders, the Alan Arkin directed movie.
I covered it with Jason Bailey a few years ago when it happened to be on Criterion Channel for like 5 minutes.
It's
hard to find.
I have a Blu-ray like import from the UK, and like that's how I've got it. That is such like a, speaking of all like the sort of like shagginess of like The Long Goodbye, it's a very shaggy movie. It's a very dark movie. It's a very twisted. It's also like the only made movie that Gould produced. Him and his producing partner tried to produce another one that, you know, came apart very disastrously. But it's like, I mean, it's a fascinating movie. Gould is so good in it. Donald Sutherland shows up for one scene and delivers like the monologue to end all monologues as like a priest, like overseeing a marriage. God,
Sutherland does that so well, though.
JFK, as well, is like a great example of him coming in for one scene and stealing the movie. I mean, I love that one. I love Getting Straight is another great one around that same time. I hadn't seen that until very recently, where he's playing a professor who used to be very progressive, is now a little bit more straight-laced.
With Candy Bergen, right?
Yeah, Candy Bergen's his girlfriend, yeah. And she's more progressive, and she's kind of pushing him to be more progressive. He's at this university where there's a lot of like student protests, and he sort of gets like reactivated. Like it's very, that is very like post-Vietnam movie, where like the younger generation is a lot more revolutionary, and he's kind of like been phasing out, but is kind of worked back in. Richard Rush directed that one. I really like that one a lot too.
Yeah. No, that's a great one. Another film that we watched, we weren't like in love with it, but it was an interesting watch, was Capricorn One, one that was new to both of us, kind of an interesting thriller. OJ Simpson's in it, which is very random. But it's Mission to Mars. People are faking it. Things are happening. It raises a lot of questions. It takes itself like very seriously, and it kind of goes on too long, and the tone doesn't work fully. But Gould is a journalist. It's an interesting one. I think the 90s were interesting for Gould too. He was in American History X, was really good. Like
you and Roxana just talked about that.
Yeah. He was in Friends, of course, and then Ocean's 11 introduced him to a new generation. Yeah.
Yeah, I like Capricorn One. I like it's Capricorn One is an interesting one where it's like it's placed in the 70s paranoia thriller sort of genre, which is like one of my favorite genres in the world. It's definitely not the top tier of that genre. It's not The Conversation. It's not The Parallax View.
No.
But I do agree with you that like I feel like the biggest issue is the tone. Like it can't figure out the tone. Like it's a little bit like satirical at times, but like also like it takes itself very seriously. And I think that it would have like done better to have solely focused on Gould's character as like the reporter, but it has like this very like panoramic view of, you know, checking out like a lot of different characters. But it is interesting. It's directed by Peter Hyams, who also directed Busting with Gould. Like a couple years before that, which is a cop buddy movie with Ellie Gould and Robert Blake. It's very like scuzzy. It's very fun. And I also really like The Touch, the Bergman movie that Gould did, where Gould was kind of the first and I think only like Hollywood star who's ever been in an Ingmar Bergman movie. And he's got a huge beard in that. He's very sexy in it. He's also playing like a total like scuzzball, like an absolute bastard, but he's very like has so much sensuality in that movie that I'm very drawn towards. A few years ago I interviewed Mia Hansen-Love, who directed Bergman Island, and I asked her kind of what her favorite Bergman movie is, and she said The Touch, and specifically because she loved seeing the specifically American energy of Gould in an Ingmar Bergman movie, which I think is really interesting.
Oh, I love that. I never would have guessed that would be the one that she would have gone with. So
yeah,
that is
really
fascinating.
Yeah,
to
it really
me.
Surprised me.
Yes. Well, Mitchell, I want to thank you so much for doing this. Obviously, we're going to, you know, give the people what they want. These Zooms, we're going to help you make some moving money. People will hit me up.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll do a whole thing. So they can check out your walls and your collection. No, but I really want to thank you for doing this. And people listening, I don't know if we're allowed to mention it, so I'll cut this if I can't. But we are going to be doing something in the future with Screen Drafts. And Blake Howard is going to be joining us. So get excited for that, everyone. And Mitchell will always be back on this podcast because I love talking to them about movies. They have the best insights and are just one of my faves. So Mitchell, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me.
I also want to thank everyone for listening, especially my patrons who support the show and help fund my research, equipment, film rentals, RSS fees, and more for as little as a dollar per month at the Film Intuition Patreon, which is the home base for the show. Other ways you can support the podcast are by sharing, reviewing, and subscribing to Watch with Jen wherever you get your podcasts, and also checking out the cool merch store hosted and created by our talented logo designer, Kate Gabrielle. You can find the merchandise store, including shirts, tote bags, stickers, and more by visiting filmintuition.com and clicking on the shop link. The show's theme music is Solo Acoustic Guitar by Jason Shaw and is available in the free music archive. You can also reach me or interact with Watch with Jen anytime on Twitter, either at Film Intuition or our Watch with Jen account as well. Well, until next time, please take care and happy movie watching.
This is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen.